This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Next week, it's back to school for more than 56,000 Boston public school students, but it won't be business as usual in many of the city's schools. For example, students at Blackstone Elementary in the South End will find that 38 of their 50 teachers from last year will be gone. That's because Blackstone is one of 12 underperforming schools in Boston, where the district has been given the authority to replace more than half the teachers. Behind the scenes, there's more change. Boston schools are expecting about $30 million in federal Race to the Top funding. To get that money, the state replaced its educational achievement standards with national ones that some critics say could be weaker. And ongoing contract negotiations with the Boston Teachers Union could result in an extra hour in the school day and merit pay for teachers. Joining us now to talk about these changes is Boston Public School Superintendent Carol Johnson. Carol, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, Sasha. I'm glad to be back.
And listeners, are you a Boston Public School parent, teacher, or student? Are you a parent, teacher, or student anywhere? What do you think about a possible longer school day and about teacher pay possibly being connected to test scores? Superintendent Carol Johnson is here to take your questions. Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Superintendent Johnson, as we just said earlier, this year, school districts have the authority to replace teachers at so-called turnaround schools, underperforming schools. 12 Boston Public Schools now have that label. What kind of changes are parents and students going to see at these turnaround schools when they go back to school next week?
Well, each of the schools absolutely submitted plans to the state that were reviewed, and they include things like more time for teacher planning, more time for student engagement, more time for students actually to learn, because what we found in the schools where students are performing well, they are getting the additional time and the additional support to perform well. We're also going to be seeing partners working with those schools. Many of the schools that are on the state's list are in something called our Circle of Promise, which is a circle that we've drawn around where many of the schools are concentrated. And we believe that it's important not just for us to change and to improve our performance, but to solicit help from partners. So they're going to see more time. They're going to see a very focused effort on teaching and learning. We've recruited great principals, and we're very excited about the changes we're making.
When you say partners, what kind of partners?
Well, we know that students need extra help in social, emotional ways, and so helping with some of the non-academic needs of students will be important. We also, because we're extending the school day, we don't just want to add minutes. We want students to be doing different kinds of things so that they're engaged. What we've learned from the work we've done at the Edwards Middle School, we had partners working with us in an after-school program so that we could offer more engaging opportunities for students that range from arts to athletics to other kinds of things. And so we see our partners, we have great partners, City Year, Citizen Schools, and others, as well as Sociedad Latina and High Square Task Force, people who work with students on leadership development. And so we see these partners as really critical to our overall strategy for improving those schools.
And partners with social and emotional issues is obviously very important because many teachers say we have students that have issues far beyond academic issues that we are not equipped to help them with. So that sounds like a key piece.
Absolutely.
Here.
That is a key piece. We're working with an organization called Boston Connects, and they act kind of as a broker. We look at each individual student, and then we try to figure out what the need is. Is it health-related need? Is it a family support need? What specifically could we do to help that student achieve?
Now, these turnaround schools will also see teachers gone this year who were there last year. Do you anticipate some sort of upheaval, an emotional upheaval, when beloved teachers are no longer there, assuming these were beloved teachers?
Well, some of our teachers in the turnaround school have already come back because they've been working and training together to build a new team. I think we wanted teachers to interview and to recommit that they were willing to do whatever it takes to turn these schools around. And I think we're very excited about the team of people that have, and I guess I would say we're just thrilled that so many very experienced, high-quality teachers chose to interview and asked to go to these schools. I think they were interested in the challenge and the opportunity to really show that they could improve performance at these schools.
Listeners, we have Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson in the studio here to take your questions and comments. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Gail from Hyde Park is calling. Hi, Gail. You have Carol Johnson here to answer your question.
Yeah, I couldn't hear some of the response, so maybe you responded to this while I was on hold. But, you know, I think it's great that the teachers are getting merit pay, and I hope And I hope that will translate into a better performance for the kids academically. So I hope that you will comment on that if you haven't already. And then also, you may have answered this too when I was on hold, but in terms of the 38 teachers that are not coming back to the Blackstone, you know, where are they going and on what basis were they let go? And, you know, if they were presumably not performing well, are they just going back into the same system again to not perform well again?
Gail, thank you for that. You raise first a key issue, merit pay, which is that, Superintendent Johnson, you have said that teachers perhaps should have their paychecks linked to performance in some way, how they perform, how their students perform. Can you talk about that issue?
Well, as you know, we're renewing the contract for the with the Boston Teachers Union, so we're in discussions now. But one of the things that we've put in place with the turnaround schools, those 12 schools, and we have the authority because of the ed reform legislation to make some immediate changes in those schools. We believe that teachers should work in teams and they should work together, and that the results in a school are the results of what the first grade teacher might do, the fourth grade teacher, together. So if a school makes enormous progress, we think that they should get a reward. There should be some recognition. So we do have in our provision a pay for excellence provision where when we see excellence, we do want to reward it. I know that I hear from a lot of teachers who say, you know, I didn't go into the profession to make more money. That's not what's important to me. Absolutely, the most gratifying thing is to see students learn, to see a student learn to read. Those are exciting things. But I think in the past, you got a reward if you stayed longer and if you took more credits. What we're saying is it may be important to have more experience. It certainly is important for teachers to continue to take courses. But it's also important to say we believe that your performance has to result in students getting better. And we want to reward that as part of the overall strategy for making sure we recognize excellence, that it's not incidental that we get these kind of results.
So you're saying the current lockstep system, where based on what degrees you have and how many years you work, determine your pay is not good enough.
It's just not good enough, and it doesn't recognize and reward success. We want to replicate success, but we have to say, here's where success is occurring.
Although, how would that work in practice? I mean, does that mean that higher test scores actually equal a raise for teachers, and lower scores could mean their pay gets docked?
Well, I think that we want to work with the Boston Teachers Union to come up with a fair and equitable system. I don't think that we're saying that we should decide this all by ourselves, but conceptually, we are saying that in addition to years of experience, in addition to how many, whether you get your master's or your doctorate or not, we think it's just important that we begin to link the results that students get in their performance with, and we want to link it to teacher evaluations. We want to say that your evaluation is not just based on a visit by a principal once or twice a year in your classroom. It's also based on whether you get results, because at the end of the day, our students do have to pass MCAS. They really do have to be able to be proficient to go on to college and to be successful in life.
Listeners, we have Boston School Superintendent Carol Johnson in the studio here to take your calls. Try us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Catherine in South Boston is calling. And Catherine, I understand that you're a speech therapist in the Boston Public Schools.
I am.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
Did you say at the Blackstone? Did you say at the Blackstone?
At the Blackstone, yep. I was a student clinician there last year, but this year I'm employed at the Blackstone. I kind of have a problem with merit pay, and I know it doesn't affect me, but sorry, I just ran up the stairs. But in the book Freakonomics, they detail a study that was done in Colorado with teachers getting merit pay, and they found that the teachers that were getting merit pay often had their students cheat on the test.
Do you mean they assisted their students and they encouraged them to cheat on the tests?
Yes.
So
in order to receive the merit pay.
So Superintendent Johnson, is that a concern?
Well, that certainly would be a concern. It's absolutely unacceptable because it's not just cheating on the test. You're cheating students from the opportunity to learn, and none of us should be thinking about that or doing that. So I think that's why it's really important to set up a system that is fair and equitable to everybody concerned. And I think that what we want to make sure is that we have multiple indicators, not just one indicator. Last year, the state put in place something called a growth indicator. So it's not just measuring absolute performance. It's if this student came in not speaking English, how much growth did they make?
Jennifer from Jamaica Plain is calling. And Jennifer, I understand you have a thought about the role of parents here.
My son's school received one of the superintendent's grants We got about $1 million a year, which was great, and they lengthened the school day. And then they cut the funds, and one of the things we lost was parent coordinator positions. The research shows that parent engagement is one of the key factors in schools improving and students improving, and there's too much focus on teaching to the test and not enough on engaging parents and getting them really involved instead of just the middle-class professional parents, which are the ones that move to the suburbs.
Jennifer, thank you for that. Superintendent Johnson, of course, this is also a huge issue.
I mean, absolutely.
To some degree, are teachers helpless if parents are not very involved?
Well, we know that in our schools that are performing the best, we do have active parent engagement. And I couldn't agree more with Jennifer. I think that teachers are expecting parents to help at home to continue learning. I want to mention two things, though, that we've done and that I think are really important. Last year, we had what we call Parent University. Parent University included 10 meetings for parents on Saturdays where parents could learn more about the school district, learn more about what they could do at home to help their students. And we had over 200 parents who consistently came on those Saturdays, and they said that they felt better equipped to work with the district and work with their children at home. This year, we're giving out a set of brochures to families. So it tells you what we're teaching in first grade and what you can do at home in first grade, what we're teaching in second grade and what you can do at home. So for every grade level, and then when we get to the secondary level, is what we're doing in high schools and what you can do at home. We think this partnership between families and students and teachers is just really a partnership that's so critical to student success. And we do want to do a better job. I'm very disappointed to hear that the parent coordinator position was cut, because we have what we call family community outreach workers. We think they're just critical to the work that we carry out.
Superintendent Johnson, as you've mentioned, you are in the middle of contract negotiations with the Boston Teachers Union. One thing that you are pushing for is that an hour be added to every school day. The union is saying, okay, we'll do that, but you have to pay us. And you, I believe, have said we'll pay roughly $4,000 extra per year per teacher for that time. I believe the union wants a lot more. Could that end up being a real deal breaker or a sticking point in negotiations?
Well, I think we're still in negotiations, so I think we'll have to wait to see what the teachers' offer is and what the plan is. But I think that what we've done with the turnaround schools is we have added an hour to each of the schools. We see some of that time being used for time for teachers to plan, and some of that time being used for student instruction. We believe that in order for our teachers to meet the diverse needs of students, we have lots of students who are learning English for the first time. We have students with disabilities. We have students whose families aren't able to provide them the enriching experiences that more fluent families can. And so we have to make up that difference. In order to close the achievement gap, we really have to make sure students have access to opportunity. We think for some students, without this extra time, they won't be able to make the progress. And we think our teachers need more time to plan for those students to meet their needs.
I should note here that you're a former teacher.
Absolutely.
I believe your husband's a teacher. I think your mom was a teacher. You have acknowledged that you understand the kind of extra hours
Absolutely.
Teachers put in. The day is not over when the school
no,
day is over.
No, it isn't. And I know from my husband bringing home papers to grade, my mother bringing home papers to grade, my grandmother bringing home papers to grade, that teaching is a very, very intellectually and physically challenging experience. And I think we're very fortunate to have great teachers in the Boston Public Schools. But I do think that we have to rethink how we're doing business. We have students who are making extraordinary progress, and 8 of our high schools were listed last year in U.S. News and World Report. So we feel good about that, but we can't feel good if we have large numbers of students dropping out and students who are not on track for being able to go on to post-secondary. And we still see significant gaps between how our Black and Latino students are doing and their white and Asian peers. And I think given that, we really have to change and make sure that we're making sure all of the students have the best education possible.
We also have a call from Jen in Brookline, who I believe is a former Boston Public School teacher. Hi, Jen.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Hi. Thank you for being on the air, Superintendent Johnson. I'm calling because I was a teacher in Boston in a school where there was a tremendous amount of turnover among first and second year teachers, mostly at the behest of the principal. And with the turnaround schools, I'm really curious how you evaluated the principal's assessments of their own teachers. It seems like it runs the risk of teachers being principals being able to clean house. And I wonder if you looked at statistics in terms of how schools had turnovers of teachers and the extent to which principals played a role in that, because they can be as divisive as they can be productive in schools. And I love teaching in Boston Public Schools, and I couldn't stay. It was not viable in that school. and I found it just a fascinating problem, but one that's really important to address.
Jen, thank you for that. Superintendent Johnson, she raises the issue of how principals are evaluated, which is probably even harder thing to do than to evaluate teachers.
Absolutely. So I would say that, first of all, Jen, we're so sorry to have lost you to Brookline, and I hope you have a great teaching experience there. I would say this. It is very important that we have great leadership in schools, and we are working to improve the quality of people. We have a Boston Teachers Residency Program that we work with people who are interested in becoming teachers. Principals. I guess when I've talked to teachers and I've asked them what would entice them to go to a turnaround school, the number one reason teachers have given me is the principal. If they have a great principal, they're willing to work in a tough environment because they have a leader who they can count on, who they trust, who they believe is fair. The Center for Teaching Quality, though, identified the fact that some of our principals are not evaluating teachers on a regular basis and giving them the kind of feedback that they need to improve. And so I think we need to also work on making sure we give principals the feedback. And last year we put in place a school-wide climate survey. This climate survey was randomly given out to parents, to students, and to teachers and other support staff. And one of the, among the set of questions in the survey, there's a question about whether you think the principal is engaged with the school, whether the principal is providing the good leadership. And so we are finding new ways to get feedback. Obviously, the test results and the growth data are other ways. But in these 12 schools, we think we've selected extraordinarily good leaders who will help us do this turnaround.
Superintendent Johnson, let's also briefly talk about the race to the top money, the money that the feds provide to the states for education reform. Massachusetts got $250 million. I believe Boston will get about $30 million over 4 years. Now, the Boston Teachers Union did not support the state's decision to enroll, to try to compete a second time around. And here's what BTU President Richard Stutman said on our show just this week.
We call it a race to the bottom because folks are chasing money. And even though the $250 million sounds like a lot of money, the city of Boston only gets $9 million out of it. And $9 million over a four-year period, so $36 million altogether, isn't an awful lot of money. And to say that in return for that, the city had to double the number of charter schools, and that's an equitable trade-off, is nonsense. Because the city schools are losing $60 or $70 million a year beginning in the year 2013 for this, I'll say, lousy $9 million. I'm not sure the exchange is worth it.
He's talking, of course, about the money that follows the kids that leave the schools. What is your response to that?
Well, first of all, I think that I've said before that the monopoly is over. If we ever enjoyed a monopoly as a school community, we don't anymore. Parents, regardless of their income level, can and will choose to send their kids to other schools. We always had a group of families who went to private schools. We have families who go now to charter schools, to Catholic schools, and students who go to METCO. We absolutely have to make sure that we provide the best product, the best services, the best education possible if we want families to choose us. And so I think that our work is really to absolutely find ways to improve our performance with students, because that's really how parents decide where to send their children to school if they feel that they'll get a great education. The race to the top, though, has four assurances that states had to meet. You had to have high standards and assessments. You had to say that you would look at data. You had to say that you would focus on your turnaround schools, and you had to focus on quality teaching and good leadership. I think that those assurances are very consistent with the work that we're carrying out. Boston and Massachusetts have always had high standards. When they were working on Common Core standards, they sent back and forth to us some of the standards, and we reviewed them. Our team of math and literacy teachers reviewed them, and we sent them back. So we think we had a hand in helping to construct the new Common Core standards, and we believe that they're consistent with the high standards Massachusetts has had. And I think that we want to use these dollars strategically.
Can you tell specifically how you think those dollars might be used?
Well, For example, these are 12 schools that we're turning around where we've received the $22 million. But we have other schools where we need more time, where teachers need to provide more support. We want to make sure that those schools that are just on the verge of becoming level four, as the state calls them, that we continue to provide support for them. And I think we're looking for ways to train teachers and train principals better.
Carol Johnson, superintendent of the Boston Public Schools, I wish we had more time with you because we have a board full of callers who had more questions that we just can't get to. We wish we could. Thank you for coming.
Well, I'll come again. Thank
Good.
You.
We have to take one more break, but when we come back, we'll check in again on the latest with Hurricane Earl, as well as another storm building in Harvard Square over a controversial new online dating site. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.